introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Once again, we got the full crew. This evening, we're recording a little late, so we're going to try to get through this thing a little quickly here so folks can get to bed. JR, I think, is on podcast 17 tonight, so we're going to jump right into this thing. We got everybody here. QB1, how you doing? How you been?
I'm good, man. Making the rounds. Got a lot going on. Closing on the house tomorrow, doing a draft guide podcast, so life is great right now. I can't complain.
My man likes to stay busy, closing on a house, doing the draft guide, got babies on the way. My goodness, man. What aren't you doing right now?
Resting.
All right, yeah, and unfortunately for you, that's going to be your steady state probably for the next 18 years or so, something like that.
Forever.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. And I guess now, the second busiest man on the pod? Prince might have something to say about that. But Miles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. Just busy.
Yeah, it seems to be going around.
Why
so busy, Miles? What's going on?
Just work. Lots of work. Lots of stuff going on. Getting ready for the baby. And yeah.
You feel ready? You ready? Like, how ready are you? What stage in the preparing for the baby's arrival are you at right now?
That's not real yet.
Like, you got a nursery set up, you painted, you put a crib together. Like, where are you at with it?
We're not painting, but we got a lot of stuff. People just keep giving us free stuff. And I'm...
Yeah, man. That's like the best thing that happens when you're a parent, and then one of your friends have, you know, gets pregnant and having a kid.
Yep.
You just get to unload all that stuff.
Exactly.
That stuff you thought you were going to have in the garage forever. Just, let's get this up out of here. Here we go. Miles would want that.
Yeah, and then we're just planning a trip to, we're coming up to Canada.
Oh, snap.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah, but you're going to, like, the other side, right? Like,
Yeah.
Way on the other side of stuff. And I guess, you know, the one man not having any babies that we know about, Saxy Prince. What's going on, man? How you doing? How you been?
That we know of.
Yeah, exactly.
So listen to all of y'all so far. You guys are doing such a stand-up job convincing me. The two next things I need to do in my life immediately is get married and have children, because you guys sound exhausted. And me and my youth, I'm just enjoying life. So after the pod, you know what I'm going to do after the pod? I'm just going to go on a walk, and I'm just going to take so you guys can see.
Yeah, enjoy yourself. You live for all of us. Enjoy that freedom. Have your fun. I had a question though, Prince, because you've been doing quite a little bit of acting going on here of late. Anything new that we should tell the people about? Anything that's gonna be out there that people should check out?
Yeah, I have a slew of short films that I've been had the privilege to be a part of. One actually just got released on YouTube called The Hall. Short little film. You know, I play a guy named Gary. Short plot of the film is just that there's this resident assistant. You know, when you lived in the dorms, you had those RAs or CAs, whatever you call them. Guy trying to prove himself, as well as his family has a long history of being CAs. So, you know, he's obviously trying to impress his father and his family and stuff. And he's just a little bit eccentric. And I play character Gary, who just, you know, he's another RA, and just sees this guy, and he's just kind of a dork and whatnot. So it's a short 7.5 minute short film or whatever, but it was a fun time. I enjoyed working with everyone there, and I'll provide a link for it, and everyone can go check it out when they have time. So yeah,
perfect. And I'll get that link in and throw it in the show notes. All right, let's jump in. This is kind of a bit of a quiet time in the off season. The first couple waves of free agency are pretty much in the books. A few things happening here and there, but really it seems as though most teams have switched into prep mode for the draft. But the last time we were on, we talked about really a lot of Viking-specific stuff, but there was some crazy business that went on in the NFL this offseason that we really just didn't talk about at all. So with us having a little bit of time to look back on things, I figure we'll get back into some of that stuff right now. And JR, I want to start with you, and I'm not sure which one I even want to start with, but what are your thoughts on, yeah, some of these trades that went down? And I guess we can start with the one that I guess made the most noise first, Antonio Brown, and this whole offseason, him, I guess, forcing his way out, making his way to the Raiders, the Steelers really getting back what doesn't seem to be a lot in this trade except for dead cap, I guess. What are your thoughts on how this whole thing went down, how Brown comported himself to make the move and get himself where he wanted to go, and just generally speaking, how it all went down with that team and how you see things going with Pittsburgh as we move into the next season?
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought he just used his leverage to his advantage, and I think his agent is the best agent in the game, and Drew Rosenhaus, and they played the game the correct way because they requested a trade, and rarely do you see players of his stature really dictate where exactly they want to go, and that happened with Buffalo when he said, he clearly stated that he wasn't going to show up if he was traded there, so he used his leverage to his advantage, and something that we've seen with John Gruden in years past is that he always wants to bring a veteran type of receiver in the building whenever he takes over a team. It happened with Keyshawn Johnson when they got him when he was down in Tampa Bay. So he's trying to replicate that kind of formula now with Antonio Brown. And everyone knows that he likes those veteran type of players. In the locker room, Mike Mayock was trying to make a splashy type of move to bring some energy and some rejuvenation back to Raider Nation before they do take off for Las Vegas. So they needed some type of star power now that Amari Cooper, when they shipped him off to Dallas. So they didn't have anybody on the perimeter. The perimeter weapons were not good at all last year. They had one of the worst wide receiver corps in the entire NFL. So they needed somebody to help out Derek Carr. But I think an interesting dynamic with Antonio Brown and Derek Carr is that how is he going to get the volume of his catches? Because Antonio Brown is more of a down-the-field type of threat, but also he can dominate in the underneath area. So with Derek Carr, he's very reluctant to go down deep down the middle of the, or deep down the field in general. He's a guy that really dominates in the minus 10 area. He doesn't really go more than 10 yards down the field. So will those explosive plays that Antonio Brown had with the Steelers, will that still stay intact with Derek Carr, a guy that it really isn't known to be aggressive like a Big Ben Roethlisberger? And I think that's where this thing could fail. And I think that's really what's going to be the determining factor is Derek Carr. Because
we'll know early, too. We'll know early if it's going to work or not.
Exactly. And Antonio, if it does not work early, Antonio Brown is not going to shy away from saying it's not working. So I think this really is a make or break year for Derek Carr. And I mean, I wouldn't rule out them taking the quarterback this year. Now, will it be early? I probably doubt that. But if the Derek Carr experiment does not work again this year, I definitely could see them moving on from him next year, because they're not going to let Antonio Brown, the last little bit of his prime, go by the wayside. And yes, John Gruden signed a 10-year deal, but who knows if he will see the length of that deal, but he wants to win now. And Mike Mayock has firmly said that he wants to win now as well, especially with this team going to Las Vegas. They want to generate some type of buzz. So I think the deal worked out for both sides. Now with Pittsburgh, they're in a very interesting situation. And I just think it was a massive disappointment to only win 3 playoff games, having Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and Ben Roethlisberger in place, never even getting to that illustrious hump or getting over the hump with the New England Patriots always in the way. So I just think it was very disappointing how that era did end, and only winning 3 playoff games with those guys, I just think that's a huge disgrace. But they're in an interesting spot as well, because they have to find somebody to help out Juju Smith-Schuster. James Washington is coming along, but he really didn't stand out like a lot of people thought he would, being the number 3 receiver in that rotation. So I think they're going to draft a receiver early. Now, will that be at 20 in the first round? I don't know. A guy like a Hakeem Butler makes sense if they want to get their next type of Plaxico Burress type of receiver to help out Juju, or if they want to take one in the second round. We'll see what they do end up doing there. So they're going to have their options in this receiver class.
All right. And moving it right along, obviously we're still going to talk receivers here, which means we got to get Miles in here to give his opinion on some things. And, obviously, the next huge trade that happened this offseason was Odell Beckham Jr. getting traded to my Cleveland Browns. So what are your thoughts, Miles, on how that all went down, what the Giants received in return, and what that means in terms of how things will look in the AFC North with Antonio Brown leaving, OBJ coming in. Yeah, what are your thoughts on kind of what that division is going to look like as we move forward with these huge trades going down?
Yeah, you know, since I'm a lifelong Browns fan, so I can say I'm pretty excited. No, I'm playing, but no, I'm excited as a football fan for the Browns to just 2 years ago they're basically a laughing stock of the NFL, and now they've really turned things around. They got their franchise quarterback. They've made a lot of moves to improve their roster, and to go get a guy like OBJ to really complement what you have with Jarvis Landry, David Njoku. I think it really just speaks to the direction they want to go, and I don't think they had to give up much to do it. I mean, obviously he's a top five wide receiver. I'd say he could get as high as two or three when he's healthy and he's playing at the top of his game. That's how good he is. So for me, I think the trade was definitely worth it for Cleveland. They have the money to spend and the draft capital. I mean, the kind of impact you'd get from a player at 17 isn't going to pale in comparison to what they're going to get out of Odell Beckham Jr. this season and moving forward. And at the same time, they really only had to give up 17. What was it? 17, three and Jabril Peppers. Is that, I think that's right. I mean, to have to give up a strong safety, and I like Jabril Peppers, but like to have to give up a strong safety to and a first round pick to basically get one of the best playmakers in the NFL. I think that's a pretty fair, a pretty good deal for the Browns and Baker Mayfield. I mean, they're really, we've seen this the last few off seasons now, watching these teams with young quarterbacks really load up and make moves to make sure that they're getting weapons around their young quarterbacks. And Baker Mayfield's probably in the best offensive situation of anybody in the NFL. I mean, I think you could probably make that argument. There aren't too many offenses that have more than what Baker's going to have this year. And they added Kareem Hunt and they have Nick Chubb. Who knows what they do with Duke Johnson, but that team's going to be really good. And their defense is really on the way too. So I really like that move a lot. I think the Giants should have gotten more for trading him, but it sounds like they were content with what they got.
Yeah, Gettleman. Yeah, he has certainly had an off season. That is,
Eli's gonna be the 2020 starting quarterback too. So
apparently, he's got a lot left in the tank. So with these two deals being done, I guess I got a question for all of you guys. And Yinka, I'll start with you here, and we'll start with the first trade we were talking about. Antonio Brown goes to the Raiders. Raiders also bring in Tyrell Williams. How do you rank, these wide receiving duos? Like, how high up in the league would you put a Antonio Brown, Tyrell Williams combo versus, say, an Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry versus Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen? Like, where are you ranking these duos? How high up do you see these guys who just changed teams with the new teams that they're on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Browns are exciting because, you know, we saw what OBJ and Jarvis Landry did in college, right? They basically were the reason why Zach Mettenberger got drafted from out of LSU. I put those two towards the top. I think when you look at the Viking situation with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, those guys are just so consistently good when both of them are on the field. Whereas, you know, you love an Antonio Brown and you love a OBJ, but you really don't see, like, those two, in my opinion, are very clear wide receiver ones. And in the Viking situation, I think that those two duos, like, they really are 1A and 1B for their team. So I'd probably still put the Vikings, towards the top. You know, but it's really close. It's a matter of, you know, I think OBJ and Antonio Brown are definitely a better wide receivers than like a Stephon Diggs or an Adam Thielen individually. But collectively, you know, do I look at a Jarvis Landry or a Tyrell Williams as being comparable to those two? I wouldn't say so. So I can see why Vikings fans would feel slighted if the Vikings wide receiver tandem isn't given the respect that they feel they should get, just because I do think that, you know, they maybe separately aren't top five guys, but, you know, together they'd probably be, you know, the best duo in the league.
Okay. And JR, what about you? How are you ranking, you know, OBJ, Landry, Diggs and Thielen, Brown and Williams, and I guess any other, you know, tandems, duos in the league that you see there at the wide receiver position? Who are the top ones for you as you think about it now that things have been shaken up?
Yeah, I think Diggs and Thielen are the clear top at the wide receiver position, in my opinion, out of those three. And I would probably put the Browns at two and then the Raiders at three out of those three, because I don't really know what Tyrell Williams is going to be in an expanded role, but we'll see what he does do in Oakland. This is a big year for him because he's gotten his money. He's expected to be that second wide receiver opposite of Antonio Brown. So we'll see what he does there. We know OBJ and Jarvis Landry are going to be one of the more formidable duos in the entire NFL. So just because of the repertoire that they do have in previous years, and then the chemistry that they do have from LSU. So we'll see how that does turn out. They have, I think, who's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the league next year in Baker Mayfield. I think he's going to make a fantastic jump just because of the weapons that he does have surrounded with him. And then you talk about a guy that I think is a really good play caller and Freddie Kitchens as well. So we'll see what does happen there. I mean, I'm going to remain skeptical in Minnesota just because, I mean, Diggs and Thielen, they're going to produce. But I want to see just how Kirk Cousins continues to distribute the ball to both of those guys. But I think they have to find a number three wide receiver just to relax some of the pressure off of them and then relieve some of the pressure off of those guys, I should say, because Aldrick Robinson, he wasn't a huge contributor, I would say, but when he did contribute in spots, it really did open up those other guys a bit more. And I would like to see them add that number three guy, maybe like a roof stretcher or somebody that can open up other parts of the field for Diggs and Thielen to produce. So I think if they're able to do that, I think both of those guys are going to have another elite type of year.
Okay. And last but certainly not least on the wide receiver question, Miles, where are you at with it? What are you thinking?
I got to agree with y'all. I think Diggs, Thielen, OBJ, but I think it's actually really close. I know y'all aren't as high on Jarvis Landry as I am. But I think he's a really good receiver, and I think especially being given the opportunity now to be that that 1B, you know, that wide receiver 2 basically on the team, that'll really help get into be behind OBJ and kind of take some of the pressure off of him. He can work that short to intermediate routes while Odell can stretch the field. And then to what you guys said, it's the Raiders would be 3. Tyrell Williams is a good player, but I don't think he's proven enough at this point to be in that conversation, to be with the rest of those guys.
Should we talk about Tannehill to the Titans or Flacco to the Broncos?
Nope.
Assembly to the Jets.
Yeah.
Nope. Now we good.
The assembly one was a good deal for the Jets. I mean, they basically what they swap fives and sixes or something like that.
Yeah, fives and sixes.
And just paid his salary, which I mean, I thought that was a pretty. They have the money to do it, so why not go get a solid player like Osemele.
No, yeah, those ones hurt. And when you finish it up with, yeah, they got the money to do it.
I mean, but at the same time, would you be willing to sacrifice one of the defensive players to get Kelechi Osemele?
I mean, but what did they give up for him?
They swapped a 5 and a 6.
I mean.
Plus the salary, which is
but that's what I'm saying. Like, you factor in the salary. Like, would you be willing to give up, let's say, Anthony Barr to swap a 5 and a 6 for Kelechi Osemele?
To be able to afford him? Probably, just because.
Hell no, boy.
No.
Hold on, y'all. Listen, just give me a second.
But if they're swapping a 5 and a 6, I feel like we can get him for something cheaper than Anthony Barr, though. No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well,
Anthony Barr's only making five, or his cap hit's only $5 million this year, so kind of hard to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, we broke.
all I'm saying is, like, if you were to do that deal, I'm just saying that it would give you I'm not just looking at Osemele as just like what he adds to the roster. I'm also saying that the flexibility it potentially has for the Vikings, because I am a little scared that they are going to pigeonhole themselves into potentially trying to get a tackle, which, you know, I'm with all y'all, you know, Dillard or Jonah Williams. Is there any of those guys? Obviously. But, you know, you just have so much talent that you can take advantage of by either trading down or getting like a, you know, interior defensive lineman or, you know, something that's valuable at 18 or 20 or whatever you decide to do. And I think that if you were to get an offensive line, you're not necessarily putting yourself in a position where you feel like you need to go get a guy. That's my mentality with it.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of offensive line, we finally signed one. Josh Klein. Happy days are here or that here again. As many on Vikings Twitter have said, y'all just need to shut up and trust Rick. Let him work. But I have a question for y'all. JR, I'm going to start with you. Is Josh Klein any good?
I mean, he's middle of the road, but, I mean, we should celebrate middle of the road in Minnesota because that's something we've been trying to get, because we just have been at the bottom of the league the past few years in the offensive line rate, because I know Pro Football Focus had us basically in the basement. I don't think we were in the 30s, but we were like 27th or 28th, I believe it was. So we've been in the basement in the lower tier for a while. And prior to last year, Josh Klein, he was middle of the road. I believe he was like the 30, he was in like 30 or 40 range, according to Pro Football Focus, as far as their rankings and how good he was. But, I mean, it's an upgrade from Mike Remmers. I will say that it's a slight upgrade. I don't think it's a huge upgrade that should be celebrated or anything like that. But, I mean, if they're able to get him back to his pre 2018 form, I think he can be a good player for them at right guard. Now, is he going to be a world beater or anything like that? No, but he can blend in with the rest of the guys, and I think he can be middle of the road or average, which is better than what we've had in the past.
Yeah, what's wild, and obviously, you know, Pro Football Focus grades are but one data point. They're not the end-all, be-all. But I think, myself included, when I think of Remmers, I think of him getting utterly destroyed early in the season. And that's just kind of what I thought about him for the entire season. But, you know, as the season went on, he did get a little better. And when you look at kind of the overall grades for last season, Josh Klein and Mike Remmers were basically the same dude. Klein was probably a little bit more consistent, but, you know, Remmers' strong second half of the season kind of brought them into a tie overall, which, I don't know. I guess maybe is a little, it makes me a little sad, a little disappointing. But then on the flip side of that, Arif did write a great piece for The Athletic. You should definitely check that out if you haven't already. That makes me lean a little bit more to the, I guess, the optimistic side of things. Miles, I know you've been really looking at offensive linemen and people that the Vikings might bring in. Just based on what he brings to the table, the new scheme, I guess, how are you feeling about the signing of Josh Klein? Are you more optimistic about things, or are you kind of just like, eh, if he's average, he's good enough?
Well, I think one thing people are looking more at into the ranking of him more than the actual grades he's had over the last 5 years. So for me, yeah, of course I have some pessimism in it. I think there's always things to worry about. I do think and believe he's a really good scheme fit for what they're looking for. I think they kind of, I don't know if we'd say overpaid, but they kind of had to in a sense at the point that they got to. But, I mean, 2014 to 2017, he basically posted a 70 grade, which I think is a pretty good grade, especially he's a lot better in pass blocking than he is run blocking. But, like, if you look at, like, Kevin Zeitler, I'm not going to compare them as players because I think Kevin Zeitler is a significantly better right guard than Josh Klein is. But Kevin Zeitler's grade in Pro Football Focus in 2018 was a 74.5. Josh Klein's highest grade of his career was a 71. And Kevin Zeitler was the fifth-rated guard in with that 74.5 grade. I think Josh Klein would be in that 25 to 30 range with his 71 grade. If you looked at it in the 2018, comparison, something like that. So like when you look at the overall grade, it looks better than it does when you look at the number he's ranked. So I think in terms of what he can bring to this team, I think the stability aspect of it, I think it's what 46 straight games he started at right guard. I know that's important because, I mean, we've lost a lot of offensive linemen to injuries, and having a guy that, you know, can come in and be a plug and play guy, a guy that, you know, can get you, like you guys have said, at least average to maybe close to above average at his very best. That's really good for what this offensive line needs. They need that kind of talent, even if it's not high end talent, to come in and produce, because I think that, like we've talked about, the scheme is really going to help mask some of those deficiencies. I mean, hopefully, you know, a guy like Klein can help out a Pat Elflein and help out a Brian O'Neill, because we know that those guys, it did them no favors last season being sandwiched, having Mike Remmer sandwiched in between them, because he just wasn't his natural position. So it was a lot harder for him to kind of adjust and help them at the same time. So knowing that Klein has that experience and he can be able to help them out, I'm not going to say it's a world beater, but I think out of the moves that they could have made based off the money that they have, and looking at some of the money that some of these other offensive linemen have been getting, I thought they got a really good deal for Klein.
And I mean, we signed one offensive lineman, so yeah. How many offensive linemen do we have under contract right now that actually have, like, interior offensive linemen that have NFL experience? Are we going with, we have Klein, Elflein, Isadora? Is that where we're at right now?
That's it.
Okay. So with that said, Miles, again, knowing that you've been doing research on this, are there any linemen out there based on a, you know, given our, I guess we'll say, financial shortcomings, our inability to really pay a large amount of money for anything at this point, and the fact that we're going to have to move things around to probably just sign our draft picks at this point, are there any linemen that are still realistic out there that could actually be helpful to the Vikings as we move through free agency before we get to the draft?
Bond index funds with lower expense ratios than comparable.
Shoot. Looking at it, there are, I mean, I know that it sounds like they have an offer extended out to Brett Jones. I mean, not that he'd be my number one choice, but I think for the versatility that he provides, that center guard flexibility is something that it really seems like they want to bring in. They offered Nick Easton money to kind of be that guy. They had how am I blanking out his name? I'm trying to find it right now. Left guard for Andy Levitre. There's a guy that they could look to. They could look to bring in. He'd fit this scheme. He's coming off a triceps injury, but he was really good for some years there for the Atlanta Falcons. So I'm kind of surprised that his market's been really quiet. But it might actually be a benefit for the Vikings if they find a way to free up some cap space. They might be able to. I mean, who knows what they're going to do? I think they're sitting at like $2.5 million right now after all the deals that they've made recently. But if they find a way to free up some cap space, they might be able to sign some of these lower tier guys that are available. But I think a guy like Andrew Levitre could really be that guy that that has starting experience, has above average experience. He's older, coming off an injury, so you might be able to get him for cheaper. But it also wouldn't alter your plans in the draft, because we still know that they need to address it in the draft too. Bring in some guys for depth and guys that you can mold and that can eventually take over. But you know, that a guy like Levitre could be that guy. I don't think Tyler Shatley's anything special, but I mean, I think as a depth piece, I know they brought him in last week. Doesn't sound like they offered him a contract, but he's a guy that has that center guard flexibility. So kind of like a Brett Jones, you bring that kind of guy in. He could be a potential spot starter for you depending on how the draft goes. So there are options out there that I think could really help this offensive line, especially depth-wise. So I'll be really curious to see how they address that, if at all.
I mean, Lord, they better do something.
Yeah. I am kind of surprised we haven't seen a little bit more traction with it. I mean, I know they have the owners meetings this week, so but it does sound like they have an offer out to Brett Jones. So we'll see how that plays out. We might actually hear something later this week. So you never know.
All right. Well, from slightly depressing news to even more depressing news, and Saxy Prince, I'm going to give you the floor for this one. Take as long as you need to get whatever takes off your chest that you need to, because your man, your boy, the homie, Marcus Sherrills, is no longer a Minnesota Viking. Yinka, how you feeling about this, man?
Yeah, it's going to be weird. You know, I was fortunate enough to talk to Marcus Sherrills a few times, actually, you know, in training camp and just go for practices and stuff. And he, you know, he's a very quiet person, very humble. I think there is a reason why the Minnesota Vikings kept him around so much, just because, you know, he just kind of went about his business, did what he was supposed to do. You know, obviously played a huge role into the Vikings special teams for 9 years. You know, he, so I think it will be interesting to see how the Vikings, you know, with changing, you know, special teams coordinator, as well as, you know, missing some of their key pieces, how they're going to really address the special teams. I know it's not as big of a deal, but I think there were times where you saw that it'd be, you know, disadvantageous to the Vikings and not giving them the field advantage that they needed at times. So he will be sorely missed. You know, he's a native Minnesotan. But you know, at the end of the day, it's I don't blame guys for wanting to put themselves in positions to, you know, not only you make more money, help out their families and whatnot, but also, you know, some guys, they do care about winning. You know, they want to be part of winning organizations. And yeah, Marcus Sherrills just went to New Orleans. You know, he has some familiarity with some guys on the team already. So, you know, good for him. And, you know, I wish him all the best.
Okay. Miles, JR, anything to add about Sherrills leaving?
Pour one out for the home.
Yeah, right.
Oh, all right. Let us see here. Let me keep it moving, take a look at these notes. And really the last thing, the last point, I mean, it's really just the one move, so I don't really know if it's really worth getting into that deeply. But the Vikings did make a move since the last time. We've addressed the offensive line, picked up a player who at least looks like he'll be able to be a serviceable starter, which seems in many ways to have calmed some of the panic around the offensive line situation that was previously going around on Vikings Twitter anyway. And so, JR, I'll start with you. Should this in any way affect what the Vikings plan on doing as it gets to the draft? I know that pretty much before the Josh Klein signing, most mock drafts that I'd seen had the Vikings picking an interior lineman in round one, maybe another one in round two before getting into another player, another position group. As you think about it now, maybe if nothing else, just from the fan base perspective, does this signing allow the Vikings to go in another direction without as much backlash? Or if you're the Vikings, does this signing affect anything that you're planning to do really going forward as it pertains to the draft?
I don't think it changes anything, honestly. And I mean, they paid him as if he is a starter, which I expect him to be. He's going to be their right guard. Now, what it does make flexible is what they want to do with Riley Reiff. We'll see if they want to slide him down inside to left guard or if they want to keep him at left tackle. And I think Mike Zimmer came out this week at the owners meeting and stated that depending on what or who falls to them in the draft, that's what they're going to do with Reiff. And I mean, Reiff seems to be okay with that. I'm sure they approached him about that, about a move to guard. So let's say Andre Dillard or even Juwan Taylor or somebody like that falls to them or in their laps at 18, maybe they can slide Reiff inside to guard. But if somebody doesn't fall to them, they want to take a guard later on, or if they want to trade back and take a guy later on, even in the first round, and slide them or keep them at guard and then keep Reiff at left tackle, that's something that they do have the flexibility to do. So I don't think the Klein signing changed anything. It just really checked another box at the top of the depth chart now that they have their right guard. So me personally, it wouldn't change anything for me. I just would see Josh Klein as a depth signing, and I still would try to get two starters in this draft because you don't know if he's going to return to that pre-injury form. Worst case scenario, if he doesn't, you already have two guys that you drafted this year.
What about you, Miles? What are you thinking? Josh Klein is in. Does this change any way that you're thinking about the draft or the Vikings should be thinking about the draft? Does this deprioritize inside offensive line for you? Yeah, how are you playing things out as the draft moves forward? Or are you in JR's camp if it doesn't matter?
Can I interject real quick, Jason? JR said something that it had me thinking. Getting the two starters on the offensive line, because something I've been thinking about, Vikings should double dip. Do you think this offense takes a dramatic step forward if you do what Indianapolis did and you get those two starters right away, and maybe that changes things? Or maybe getting one starter on the offensive line and then getting maybe some kind of receiving weapon, whether that be tight end or wide receiver, whatever, and make the bigger jump?
What I would say is I don't like using Indianapolis as an example, even though they did double dip at offensive line. The thing that really changed their fortunes is getting Andrew Luck back. I mean, yeah, Quentin Nelson is amazing, and their offensive line was a lot better. Their running game was a lot better, but they got Andrew Luck. Like, that is the factor, I think, when you're looking at how much better their offense was than the year previous with Jacoby Brissett running the show. I mean, we're not getting Andrew Luck this offseason. So
no,
I think that even if the offensive line does get quite a bit better, I think people will be disappointed in the impact that does have on the overall offense, just because I think that our wide receivers, which are so important to a quarterback's performance, are already so good. It's going to mean the offensive line really have to go from where we were as terrible to like elite for it to make the huge difference that people want to see. And I just don't know that we're going to get that in one off season. Or
they're really banking on scheme to be that solution, which, I mean, it can be, like we saw in 2017, it can really play a big factor if you're building it to your quarterback strengths. So, I mean, I don't we don't expect elite play. Average play is really where they need to be.
Agreed.
Yeah, no, and I was saying, as far as Indianapolis, getting Andrew Luck back obviously was a huge part of that. But I mean, they did have also one of the, I would say, more porous offensive lines that the previous year. So I mean, the combination of getting Andrew Luck back plus a more stable offensive line. I'm just wondering with, how poor the Vikings offensive line last year was. You know, we keep talking about getting to average, and it doesn't really seem like we're getting there, because that seems to be where we are shooting for, rather than shooting past it and then, falling into being average. So I'm just curious if, getting those two starters on the offensive line really solidifies how good this offense can be with some of the issues that they were having.
Okay. All right. Anything else anyone wanted to cover before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, back to your point. So the question of, do I believe adding Josh Klein really changes the way they should view the draft or anything like that? I don't. I think Josh Klein is basically it's a pen. you have a pen, you write it down in pen that he'll probably be their starting right guard. They didn't pay him that much money to, and have all that dead money to eat if they were to try to replace him right now. I think they're going to view it as, yes, they need to sign or draft two offensive linemen early. I think they know that they need a future offensive tackle. So I think that's priority number one for me. Oh, and then you throw in guard, because obviously they don't have a starting left guard right now. But I don't think Josh Klein should change anything that they look to do in the draft. But at the same time, he just helps make sure that they don't need to draft somebody at his position right away. But we know that they need a left guard and they need a future left tackle, depending on what their plan is for Brian O'Neill long term.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that, Miles. We went off the tangent and I forgot about your answer.
That's Prince's fault, not yours.
Okay, well,
Go ahead, Miles. Go ahead.
I was trying to take that one for you, Prince. But before we get up out of here, I guess, JR, you did mention that you were recording some things earlier today. What do you have on the go that people should be on the lookout for?
I don't know if I should say it, but I was on Locked On Packers yesterday. So, yeah, I'm sure nobody will listen to that. But just discussing draft things also, the latest episode of the Draft Board Podcast will be up tomorrow, where I'm actually discussing the Vikings. So be sure to check that out.
Okay. Miles, anything from you? No. Okay. Prince, what's cracking? How's the series going? When should we expect the next one?
Yeah. The series is actually going really, really good. I'm already on week four, just putting final touches on week three. I might release weeks three and four together. Week three was just awful. It was the Buffalo game, getting blown out 27-0 in the first half. Really, as you can imagine, doesn't really leave a lot for it to be desired. So I didn't really find a lot of plays there. I think I only found one or two. So just going to synthesize that and I get week four out and then probably just release them both roughly at the same time. So.
All right. And even though we've been giving Miles a bit of a hard time for not putting out the stuff that he started working on here, we are putting Miles and JR to work as we get into April, as we lead into the draft. We'll be doing an update on last year's draft series. So excited about that. Going to be some short episodes where Miles and JR give us a little insight into their scouting process and give us a couple players that we should be looking out for as the draft rolls along. So excited to get that done and recorded as we get into April. But that is it. That is all. As always, listeners, thanks for sticking with us. Gentlemen, as always, thanks for coming on and recording. And we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.